Okay, and welcome to episode 24 of Shockwaves. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Galuzzo. Sitting with me is Mr. Elric Kane.
I'm here.
You're here in a Shockwaves shirt.
That's my third one. I haven't cleaned any of them. I want one for every day.
I see. You just keep wearing them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm one of those people who's not ashamed to wear his brand to the place he does it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Some people wouldn't do that.
You Respect. Can't wear the band yeah. to the concert, yeah, Elric.
Man. I'm too old for that shit. Yeah. I'll just do what I'll beat to my own drum.
Fair enough. And also with us is Rebecca McKendry.
What's up, guys? Howdy. I'm feeling better this week. Are you feeling better, Rob?
Yes, we are slowly recovering. This is our post-Halloween blues. I don't even have the blues. I'm just kind of glad it's over.
I'm tired.
I think the same thing. Like, I had somebody message me on Facebook today and like, are you sad October's over? And I'm like, honestly, it's a relief because we like burn all cylinders the entire way through October. So by the time that like Halloween night finally rolls around, Elric and I were talking today where at like Halloween, both of us were like, we're not wearing costumes out. We've done that all month. I've done like four costume events.
Well, plus, according to your daughter, Marnie, isn't Halloween your job all year
long? I go to work at Halloween every day.
Well, that's true. Unlike people, I mean, everyone who listens to this probably watches horror all year round.
Yeah.
But there are humans. There are some humans out there who I guess like save it for October. And sure. I'm always like, oh, really?
My final tally was 53 movies.
That's pretty good.
Wow.
I didn't count.
Yeah.
But it had to be over 40.
There was a guy I used to work with at Fangoria who referred to Halloween night as amateur night. Like, we do it all year long, but Halloween night, it's like amateur night.
That's
like,
New
we'll
Year's
give
for
you
me.
That.
I do want to say congrats to three guys. I don't have your names right in front of me, but I know at least three people who did my 31 list, and there's way more than that who did a mixture of all of ours.
Oh,
which is
okay.
amazing.
So multiple people who did mixture. I will not be giving you anything if you mix them. That's up to Beck and Rob. But those three
what?
Who did just mine, I will hook you up.
It depends. We'll see. Reach out to us on Twitter.
Yeah,
we'll see if we can work
it
out.
Tell us that you did it, and we'll see what we can
What you really want to know is which of those movies, you know, were cool revelations to you, or a movie that was new. I definitely got a few people saying they hadn't seen Pin before, and that
which
I've always had to share the Pin love.
Messaging me about Ticks, and that was the one I was excited
That's
of
cool.
because they'd never seen it before, and they were like, I can't believe you put this on your list. I kind of begrudgingly watched it, and I was like, oh my God, this is great.
That was the point. It was hopefully we hit a few of the classics and recommended some stuff that you probably wouldn't have watched otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do these. I mean, none of us probably do it for ourselves. But I'm thinking actually, because I read that somebody did this and I was like, oh, that's a great idea, which is to list for myself next year 31 I haven't seen that I need
that's
to catch up on.
Joe Madry does that.
And he did the modern thing, which I love that he did that.
I'm so undisciplined when it comes to that, because I'll like actually go through my film library and be like, you know what? I've never watched this DVD. I'm watching it tomorrow night. And then as soon as tomorrow night rolls around, I'm like, you know what? I'd just rather watch the Monster Squad.
Yeah, it's very much by gut. Yeah.
It's by gut. I mean, yeah, it's tough. You know, and also you have to curate. The way Joe curated it was, you know, I lent him a lot of my movies because he's not big into horror comedy because it's very rare that people do it right. But he said, he's like, you know what? I appreciated you forcing those movies on me because it broke up the vibe. You know, you watch two or three pretty straight horror movies in a row, you kind of want something that's tonally a little different and
especially
fun.
If you're going to do it for 31 episodes.
Sure.
He watched The Canal, the one that I had said was scary. It's a good way to do it because he didn't get to see a lot of the last films of the last few years, which is great. But I feel like there's, like for me, and I actually did it on a couple that I'm going to talk about today, but I forced a couple of the old black and white ones I hadn't seen that I just, you know, oh, it's a good time to watch that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to be, my challenge for November because of the Noirvember label is to just go, I'm going to go all in on at least a couple a week, black and white, older titles. I've got all the Val Ludens, not all of them, but like five of them recorded from this month of TCM. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to kind of start with the Val Ludens and then move to a couple fringe ones I've never caught. I've seen most of Val Ludens, but you know, rewatching will be great.
Seventh Victim.
Yeah, Seventh Victim.
It's amazing.
That's a good one. But so that's where I'm going to go for November to keep my horror streak, but also watch some stuff that I tend to put those off.
Yeah.
Because they're older and, you know.
And I plugged it last week, but since you're moving into the 50s, you need to see Dementia. It's like by far my favorite 1950s movie, not Dementia 13.
Yeah, not the
couple of them. But it's good.
If I can find it.
I think they have a copy at Eddie Brandt's. Okay. I'm pretty sure I've rented it there.
That's where
before.
You can find anything. Yeah. But yeah. So off the top, let's do a few different announcements, if you will, show announcements.
Uh-oh, I don't like the sound of this. You got me nervous.
Don't be nervous.
Oh, no.
Here's the first and the most important one. Okay. Special thanks to Patrick Bromley over at F This Movie. Always been so tremendously supportive of the show, and a lot of people have come to us through him. He surprised me and wrote a top 10 Shockwaves episodes, or I think 10 you should listen to.
Yeah.
He did that tradition with Killer POV as well. It's always fun for us to figure out or hear what other people respond to in terms of that.
I also got turned onto his show by that list because I really didn't listen to a lot of podcasts till this year, really, because of my commute. So I've listened to about, the last three of his Halloween ones, The Beyond with our friend Jackson Stewart.
Yeah, I listened to that one too.
And it's been great. And so it's really fun to even though I've known Patrick in this online way for a year, I hadn't really gotten to a show yet.
Yeah.
And now I'm a fan of the show.
I'll also mention he's now writing for Blumhouse.com.
Because I read
some of his stuff on his blog and was like, dude, you need to be with us.
So, yes. Yeah, no, he's a good writer as well. And we were really appreciative of it. But in the comments, as always happens, people were, I don't want to say complaining, but voicing their...
Questioning
the inclusion or the kind of changing of our chemistry, if you will, because Ryan is part of the show. So let me officially say that Ryan Turk is our fourth co-host.
He's a co-host.
He's a member. Mm-hmm. Ironically enough, I'm announcing this on an episode he is not a part of.
Yeah, Ryan's on a film co-host. Set this week.
No, he actually has work, and that will happen occasionally. We did 140 episodes as Killer POV. We are proud of it, and we appreciate it. But, as is the case with you and all of your jobs, you evolve, you change as people, you try to keep things interesting and exciting. And now, this is Shockwaves. It's a different show. We're still here. Ryan, we didn't know his involvement initially. We were just kind of winging it.
We just kind of wanted him in.
Officially, we said to him, he can come anytime he wants.
Right.
Yeah. And so he would come when he could fit in, which was a lot of the time he couldn't, and you were going to make it more of just a little segment of a pick.
Of music and stuff.
But the reality
is... But now
we
record in front of his office.
Yeah, so, like he's literally 3 feet from us right now. So if he wasn't
in
New Orleans. But
this is very behind the scenes-y where people don't know how podcasts work, but largely Rob... had to book, 140 guests on the old show, which means we've gone through a large part of our mutual Rolodex.
Sure.
And you get to a certain point where it's tough. And so Ryan also, has, new people he knows in a whole nother world. So it's adding another one of the great
people
we can
give. Ryan has been responsible for a lot of the great guests we've had on Shockwaves, plain and simple, by sending out an email and making it happen. So
we love Turek and the boys with us.
He's a part of the show. And look, we're going to keep evolving the show any way we can to a way that makes sense both to us and to you guys, the listener.
Yeah.
And so, as you'll probably notice as you downloaded this episode, it's a little shorter than the average episode, but the reason being is because we're going to try this out. We've been kind of talking to people and analyzing things, and we want to do what's best for the show and for our audience and give it to them in a way that we think will make sense. So... a lot of people tell us that they love the first half of the show where we talk about what we've seen. Other people prefer the interview portion. Everyone has their favorite part of the show. Mm-hmm.
And we always hear, I wish the first part was longer. I wish you guys weren't rushing through it to get to the interview, things
like
that.
So starting with this episode, you will now get Shockwaves twice a week, meaning that we will spend a little bit more time on the first half of the show where we get to talk about what we've seen and kind of concentrate on that.
And try new things.
And we're going to try some new stuff, which we'll be trying tonight. We're going to try
a
game
in
a little
while. Yeah, we want to do,
some news and stuff.
So every week it'll be a little bit different. And you'll get the same introduction you always get, but we want to, spice it up. And, the reason a lot of people were very responsive to the bonus episode I did with Ryan and Tony Giles where we played the Halloween game. And it's like, let's do more of that. Let's try to figure out interactive things. So that's all we're doing is we're splitting it up so you get it twice a week. The interview will be the second part of the episode, which I believe will drop on Monday.
Thank you.
And this on Friday.
And this on Friday. Yeah.
And the other thing is everybody, including in this room, listens to podcasts in a different way. And to some people think it's too short. Some people think it's too long. I always tend to find a 2+ hour episode to be overwhelming. But it's kind of like if I look on my phone one day and I have an hour-long thing, it's like, all right, that's about my commute back and forth here. Mm-hmm. And then 2 days later, I have another one that's an hour long. You're still getting the same amount of show. We're just going to try to give you more.
Yeah.
And what this also enables us to do is you'll definitely get 2 a week. And whenever we're capable of, we want to do little bonus things, even if they're short. Like Elric might want to go off for 20 minutes to talk about a specific possession. So you'll finally get the possession episode.
It's time, Rob.
I want to do music stuff. I love the music side, but I don't know if people want to listen to a whole episode of that. Yeah. So that might be just a little bonus segment.
I love doing lists. So that's kind of my big forte on the site. So I would love to just spend like 10 minutes and go over my top 10 films from the 1950s. And, you know, but maybe not everybody wants to listen to that. So you've got some variables now.
It'll all come up in the feed. If you subscribe, you're going to get it all. So just bear with us. Don't freak out. Don't start going nuts on us on Twitter and be like, how can you change the show? Change is a good thing. And we just want to see.
It's more shockwaves.
Yeah,
people.
We want to see how it works. Yeah. We're trying to give you more of the same show. So that's that. That said, let's talk.
There was so much going on this week because of Halloween and everything. So I'm excited to see what all you guys watched.
Yeah, you know what? I'll kick it off. You know, things get a little hectic towards the end of the month because obviously we've seen so much stuff. But I broke out a lot of horror anthologies. The one that I've already seen, I saw last year, I discovered it when Scream Factory put it out, is John Carpenter's Body Bags, which is my absolute favorite. It's just, I'm so glad that it's one of those gems that I got to see now as an adult. And my roommate walked in, he'd never seen it, and I sat him down, and it's so much fun. You know, John's kind of the Crypt Keeper host in it, and he hosts three segments, and his direction, because he directs two of them, Toby Hooper directs a third, his direction is so sharp, and literally everybody you see in it is a cameo. So you'll see Wes Craven pop up, and then David Naughton, and then Robert Carradine, and like all these great faces, Mark Hamill. It's now officially become one of my Halloween traditions where I will definitely watch that one every year.
And I mean, and his like aptitude for comedy in the second one with Stacey Keach is so good that it makes me go, I kind of wish there was more Carpenter comedies, you know, because it's just a brilliant segment. I love that. But I agree. I think it's one of the best of the rediscoveries of those movies you saw. I did see young and was like, especially about the Mark Hamill story when I was young. And now I watch it and I'm like, that's a great, scary story. Like
it's dark.
Actually some of Toby's better stuff, you know? So yeah, I'm a big fan of it too. I'm on board.
Yeah. So I saw that one and then a couple that I'd never seen before. One is an anthology called Dead Time Stories from 1986. And I can talk about this now because Scream Factory has announced it as one of their upcoming titles. And the crew over there were kind enough to ask me if I'd do some of the interviews for it. So I got to interview the writer-director, Jeff Dahmer, and a lot of the cast, including Melissa Leo and Scott Valentine from My Demon Lover and Family Ties and all that. And you know what? It's always been one of those hard-to-find movies. I got to see the HD transfer they did for it. It looks spectacular. And it's really cool. It's three segments, and it's, you know, kind of framed around a little boy that can't get to sleep because he keeps thinking that he sees a monster in his closet. Mm-hmm. So he keeps calling his dad and or his babysitter, I can't remember, to come in and tell him stories. And he's like, well, what do you want to hear? He's like, well, just make something up. So it's really fun. The tone of all of them is slightly off. So the first one's about witches. And the second one's about a werewolf. And then the third one is kind of like a weird Goldilocks retelling, but like in a really bizarre comical way.
I remember that one. That's the only one. I remember the cover and I remember that last story.
Yeah. And, you know, it's for what it is, a mid-80s horror anthology of the VHS generation. I think it's really a cool movie. And it's going to be one of those things that Scream Factory puts out that is going to be a fun rediscovery for people that remember it and a cool new discovery for people that have never seen it before. And I was really taken aback. The interviews are going to be so much fun because this is all those people like Melissa Leo, Scott Valentine, long before he did Family Ties. This was like their first movie together, all like young, struggling people in New York who have a great deal of affection for each other. That's why they all showed up to be a part of the special features because you could tell the camaraderie between them was really great. And it translates on screen. It's a lot of fun.
Cool.
You know, so that's a really cool one. And finally, another anthology that I'd never seen before called Terror Tract. This was on a double feature with Cherry Falls on DVD. Like the only way you can get Cherry Falls for up until that Blu-ray was as a double with this movie. And it's God, I lost the date. I feel like it's early 90s maybe, but it's the wraparound. It stars John Ritter. And so he's kind of like this real estate agent showing houses to this young couple. And of course, he has to divulge what happened in the house before. So all three segments are kind of like these horrible crimes that have taken place in each house that he shows them to. And it's pretty good. The first one was called Nightmare, and it's kind of like this it's a very Tales from the Crypt kind of vibe where you know, this woman is cheating on her husband, and then the lover comes in, and then he catches them. And then it turns kind of creep show where they kill the husband and, you know, dump his body with his car. But like she kind of keeps seeing him. And then it's like, is it a nightmare? Is it really happening? Is he coming back? So it reminded me very much of Creep Show. The revelation is the second skit called Bobo, because it's about a little annoying killer monkey versus Bryan Cranston.
Wow.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Bryan Cranston is at top of his game. Wow. Versus a little monkey.
Little monkey. Is this like a real monkey or
it's
a
real monkey.
Monkey.
No, it's a real monkey. All right. So that one was pretty great. And then the final segment is called Come to Granny. And it's a slasher. It's really, really cool. It's like this young kid who goes to see a psychologist to say that he keeps seeing visions of the famed granny slasher. It's a guy that wears like an old lady mask
That's
on
a good image,
to kill people. And he keeps vicariously living through his victims because he sees it. It's super cool. You know, it's not a great anthology, but it's really good. And again, I think what we look for in these is enough good ideas to get us excited and keep watching.
Or one great story.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You got one great cast member, one great story. So I thought that one was super cool. I hope somebody like Scream picks it up and does a Blu-ray of it.
Nice.
So that's it for my anthologies.
What'd you do on Halloween night?
I just stayed in and watched movies. I always carve a pumpkin. I do the same thing. I watch Mad Monster Party. I carve a pumpkin. Yeah. And I just kept putting on movies. One was called The Monster Club, which Vincent Price, Donald Pleasance, anthology. Uh-huh. Which I'd never seen. I thought that one was pretty cool. The most famous thing from that one, which is on YouTube, is like there's all these like weird party scenes at literally a quote unquote monster club, and it's like this this woman dancer who starts to get like nude, but then it turns into a cartoon, and in the cartoon she like pulls her skin off, and then it's a cartoon of a skeleton.
Oh,
it's like a famous GIF. Yeah, from the Monster Club.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And that's another one that's three segments, and it's pretty good. And I watched The Fog, which I said on our episode with Lee Winnell. I was like, you know what? And it feels like the perfect final Halloween movie to me.
Mm-hmm. I think I put it as my first of my 31 because it either way, it feels like it sets the tone
or closes,
of that kind of vibe. That's interesting.
I also watched The Pit, which Ryan recommended last week.
So weird.
And
the bathtub scene. I just don't get it. It creeps me out.
I'm not even kidding. Every single Canadian is like that kid.
A sexual deviant?
Yeah, with we're talking teddy bear and trolley galogs.
We're talking teddy bears. They're everywhere in Canada.
I thought that kid was a sexual deviant.
Yeah.
And really, it was a bizarre movie.
Yeah, he's bizarre.
That movie is just, it's one of those special things. You're like, I don't know who made this or
why. We should feel fortunate it exists.
That's one film where I will listen to the commentary. You know, first chance I get, I'm listening to that commentary.
It felt like an eternity. That's the other thing. It's a brisk 90 minutes that felt like an eternity.
And it's got like four different plots going on, of which are like equally weird.
The babysitter,
the talking teddy bear, the kid himself is like fucked up.
He's bizarre.
It's a must-see. I completely love it.
Put that on the box. What did you guys see?
I saw, I set the tone the night before. I watched Wolfman. Hadn't seen it in
original.
Literally the Blu-ray. Hadn't seen that in maybe 20 years. I mean, it's one of those ones I just hadn't revisited. I'd seen some imagery from it lately. I was like, oh yeah, I kind of want to revisit that. I was glad I did. It was definitely one of the best, of the Universal films, I think. The funny thing I had forgotten was how suave Lon Chaney is at the start. He's not somebody I think of as suave. I think of him as almost a bit fumbly.
Yeah, and a little tortured.
Yeah, and he's a big guy, you know, and I think about Spider Baby and movies like that. So in this film at the start, he's just so suave. He's really good. He's always, you know, he's hitting on the girl training. And Claude Rains is his dad. And then Bela Lugosi is Bella, the fortune teller.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's this moment where I wanted somebody to make a gif of it so bad, which is just he looks at the woman's palm and the reaction he has to like her fate is hilarious. It's just like him going, oh, fuck.
Right.
Yeah. And it's so good. I just want to see that face. But it's just a beautiful little movie. And I love that it's like 75 minutes, you know?
Oh yeah.
And it's shot gorgeous. I don't always think Blu-ray is a game changer with movies. Mm-hmm. It's usually a big step, But with these, it's a game changer.
With black and white movies,
yeah, the depth.
There's something about them that pop.
They really do. Especially movies you've only seen on TV or on tape, or something. So for me, it was like the depth and the sets were gorgeous. I thought it was a great movie, a lot of fun. And then on Halloween night, the only movie I did stick to of my 31 movies, there's going to be a shock. Get ready to be shocked.
You watched Possession?
No, I did not. I did. That was not on my 31.
That's not a Halloween movie.
No, it's not. It really isn't. That's a Christmas movie.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah, exactly. I watched The Thing from Another World.
Oh, me too.
Because it was the movie they watch in Halloween.
Yeah.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
the right one. But here's the shock. Mm-hmm. Never seen it before.
Really?
Guess what? Neither have I.
Dude!
What?
I've only seen bits and pieces.
Yeah, of course
it.
I've seen bits, yeah.
And my friend Scott Reynolds had a backyard. He lives in South Pasadena, which is where a lot of Halloween was shot.
Yeah.
So we went, I took my roommate to see a lot of the spots where the original Halloween was shot, and we watched Thing from Another World because it's in Halloween, right followed by Halloween.
Nice.
And and it was great. It was so much fun.
Yeah, my mom used nice to show me that one all the time when I was a kid. Like, it was like a staple in our house, and I was always confused because the thing is a plant.
He's like, he's
like a vegetable.
Based. Yeah, I mean, you can't tell when you look at him.
No,
but yes,
I mean, he
is.
Looks like a monster, but always like, but he's a vegetable.
Yeah,
it's
you know what stood out to me is the writing.
Yeah,
the dialogue for a movie of that age.
That's the tip because Hawks's name isn't in on as director. But it's the dialogue is so Hawksian. It's like very curt, clip dialogue.
Fast.
Everyone reacts in like really funny ways.
What are you saying? I'm saying this. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also, and everyone's kind of making sly jokes at each other. And you're like, even at the end, like where you're building to a climax and you've just dealt with a monster, they're kind of like, oh, well, why don't we go upstairs? And they're like slyly grinning at each other.
Every
and you're like,
line
okay.
is a line.
Yeah.
It's like there's never just like information to move us from one scene to another. It's like every single line.
And there's
is
a lot
something.
Of characters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so different than the other thing. That's why it's a really – it just shows what a great remake it was to go in that different direction. And they do pair really nicely as two movies you could watch together and have a really good time. I really liked it, and it's one of those – I don't know why. There's a handful of classics like that I haven't seen largely because I would be like waiting to see it on a screen. But this felt
ideal
perfect,
time.
And I was so glad I did it. It was right after we finished trick-or-treating. It was late at night, Halloween, closed it out and watched it. And
yeah, that's a great
one. Had a good
one.
Time to do that. So that was a lot of fun. And then a couple of the new things, just a couple. You know, you might have seen this tweet. It was 1 p.m. on a Friday, and I'm leaving work, and I see that Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer in 2K is playing at the Lemley. And I thought, you know what? I'm closing out my Friday. because that's a movie I saw it on VHS, haven't seen it since. All the main things stick in my head, the shocking John McNaughton's Henry. And so I was like, you know what? This movie's never going to be playing in a cinema again.
Yeah.
So I just like went straight from work on a Friday. Best decision I've ever had. It was like 80-minute movie. This movie was so cool to see in that context because there was only about six people there.
You drove
1 o'clock.
All the way to the Lemley?
No, I work nearby.
Oh, okay.
And man, three times in this movie I heard, oh, Jesus Christ, no, and oh my God, don't do, oh my God, and other things that I have not heard in the movie. It's different when you see like The Conjuring, everyone's like, and scared. This was more like absolute palpable shock and like grotesque.
So you were watching with newbies.
And there were older people too. They were probably, looking around, they were like 60-year-olds and stuff who were watching a movie in the middle of the day, you know, called Henry, maybe with no context. But it was so cool to see a movie that, you know, because it is fucked up and it's not like a movie I'll be rushing to see again and, you know, quickly.
Yeah, once in a lifetime is kind of enough for
Well, but I
Henry.
Do think seeing it like in this new pristine version, which doesn't overly clean it up, it's still a dirty, dark movie. It's meant to be. But I'll say one thing about the performances in this movie, I can't think of another horror film that fits the bill, is they stop being performances while I'm watching this movie. There aren't many where it's so real. I mean, Towles is having fun. He's one of the most fun performances I've ever seen. And it's great because the first half, you actually kind of like him. You don't really ever like Henry. You don't dislike him. He hasn't done anything like absolutely grotesque until the halfway point.
Yeah, they don't
and then
show
the
it.
Great.
Like it cross cuts, I remember. It'll show like murder scenes and then it'll
the
show
opening,
him
yeah.
like doing like driving. And
it's
then it'll
walking,
show
yeah.
a woman playing a guitar. It'll show her dead.
It's the
and
result
then him
of what
playing
he's done.
The guitar. Yeah.
And he's built as fairly charming but quiet and shy. But from the midpoint, you know, when it has this key scene that everyone always, you know, discusses, it becomes so disgusting what they're capable. And if in that sequence, it's the only sequence of found footage I've ever seen that's almost too much for me. Like when we're talking about Walking Dead
about.
Last week, it's got nothing.
On that
mid-sequence,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
you're thinking that's – and then when you start analyzing it, you go, that's an actress. even that's fucked up.
Yeah.
That an actress is even willing to go to what they are doing to her and the way it is, which is, you know, it's a testament to the art form and trust and all that. But it is so intense. And then once you cross that threshold in the movie, it's a different movie in the second half. But it's actually like the body disposal stuff that, man, people, when he turns on his friend, people in the audience like couldn't even handle what they're seeing because the sounds. And it really like impressed me in a sense that like you can still shock people with an old film. But there's also just, I thought it was really funny because it's in Chicago. And he walks into after the woman wants to sleep with him. He walks into a liquor store, and the guy's like, "Hey, how about them bears, eh?" And he just turns to him and goes, "Fuck the bears." And he walks out. I was like, "That's pretty good." That was a good little moment. And
See him in Belko Experiment. He's fun.
Rooker's always been
Rooker's
great. Yeah, in Belko Experiment, he has one of the best scenes in the movie. It's awesome.
And by the way, it was just announced. It's December 6th. Is that restored Blu-ray?
Yeah,
coming out from Dark Skies.
It really just stops feeling like a performance. Because especially if you didn't know Rooker at the time. You'd be like, who is this guy? And it's kind of frightening because he's just he's like a shark. That's the best way to, his performance is like something that's just circling around, looking and then taking whatever it wants.
Yeah.
And then the last one I saw, which probably a lot of our listeners did because of our show a couple weeks ago, I saw I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, you know, hugely divisive. I can tell. I kind of guessed that, but I didn't realize to what level. I will think this will probably be one of the most divisive online films of the year, I'm going to guess, because a lot of critics and people who like, you know, arty horror films are going to really like it.
Yeah.
But people are going to fucking hate it on Netflix. This is going to probably be the worst reviewed film of the year, I would guess.
Wow.
I already saw a lot of anger building up because it's a very perfect, finely crafted, simple, slow movie. So
not a Netflix movie.
I mean, that's the irony. They spent a few million dollars making this movie.
And it seemed like it didn't matter. He got to make what he wanted.
It's awesome. Yeah.
And it, you know,
it's very experimental, the structure, but it's like a quiet ghost story that you would tell somebody under the covers. And it's perfect. You know, like for what he's doing, he's made a perfect movie. There's no chink in it. You're like, oh yeah, it's like a perfect little circle. It's very different from February in terms of the stakes are a lot higher. And I cared a lot more in February. I didn't care in this, but I also loved the little world I got to go into. Mm. And so I think it's a beautiful little film. I think it won't be for everyone, and a lot of people won't get 10 minutes in. You'll know straight away, though. Like, if you watch the first 5 minutes, you go, oh, it's this? Like, it's narrated. It's, you know, it's just a different.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
The fun part was the next day, which was just totally, the timing is just, like, totally weird. The next day after I watched this movie, I spent an hour talking about it with one of the main characters and the two stars of Saturday the 14th, both of them, Richard Benjamin and Paul Prentice.
Which I'm going to talk about in a moment.
Oh, really? I've never actually seen it, ironically, but I was going to a kid's birthday thing, and you know, so I knew she was going to be there, and I was like, you know what? You're the awesome author from this movie, like the fictional author.
Right.
She's kind of like a Shirley Jackson. It's a very Shirley
Paul
Jackson.
Apprentice,
Paul Prentice. She plays the kind of author that the character is going to look after, and she hadn't been in a movie in like almost 20 years, and they're old family friends of the Perkins, obviously, and it was so fun to like give her, like I was saying, really great things. She was just like lighting up and aging backwards. So like she just felt like she aged backwards 20 years in our conversation. She started talking about Oz and his vision, how exciting it was to be in this movie. And she just had a ball, and it was super fun to see her because she, you know, she hadn't been in a movie in a long time. Stepford Wives she was in, Catch 22. So it was a really fun. So I think for those people this is for, they're going to love this movie.
Sure.
But you know, and don't be put, if you don't love it, don't be put off when February comes. They are very different beasts. Mm. I would say that.
Okay.
Nice.
And Channel Zero, keep watching because it's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I've got that on my list this week. Channel Zero is just, it's my jam this year.
Super weird.
I'm totally into it. I think we're only on episode 4.
Yeah, that was 4 last night.
But I heard that there's only going to be 6, and that breaks my heart because I really want it to keep going.
Well, I don't know, though. I'm kind of like excited at the idea that the stories will change and because with 6, you can make a perfectly, it's like making a movie.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the length of a longish movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I only watched the first episode and I liked it, but now that they're 4 in and it's only going to be 6, I think I'm going to save it for long, you know, marathon, whatever.
Yeah. And I will say 3 was a bit plotty. Elric and I were talking about this earlier. It's a bit much like we have to fit in all these plot points so we can move the story forward. But I've heard that the 4th one, which is sitting on my DVR at home, is amazing.
Yep. TV's doing good.
Yeah. I've been digging American Horror Story as well. So, yeah. And I was really upset there was no new Exorcist this week.
Yeah. But coming up this Friday.
Damn today. Right. So this week I have been cleaning out some of my DVDs and kind of going through and doing the why do I own this question, because I need some bookshelf space so I can get more awesome DVDs. Thank you, Scream Factory. And every time they come out with something new, I'm like, I need more space. And so this past week, I was going through playing the Why Do I Own This Game, and I happened on a Burns DVD, I don't even know where it came from, of Saturday the 14th Strikes Back. Oh. And I was like, I feel like I have to save this because it's never been on DVD. Like it died on VHS a long time ago. So then I put it in and realized that there's a lot of reasons why this one never made it to DVD. But I had really fond memories of Saturday the 14th, the original, which was produced by Julie Corman. This one's just all over the place. Like it's
is this a Corman
one
too?
It's a sequel.
Yeah, it's
Strikes
a sequel.
Back? Oh my God.
Why not just Sunday the 15th? Just keep it going, you know?
No, and it's 9 years later. Like Saturday the 14th was made in 81. I think it was like early 80s, and this is definitely like 88, 89 area. And there are jokes that you have no idea what they are. Like they feel like it feels like they were trying to do like an Airplane-esque spoof of like a haunted house film. Mm-hmm. But there are things that never get explained. Like the family keeps eating cookies for breakfast and they make jokes about it. But you're like, but why? Hmm. I don't understand why. What is this referencing or
a joke
to?
Are any of the same people in it?
I don't think so.
No.
Mm-mm. No, and it was just not.
I like the mystery of where why it's even in your house.
Yeah, I know.
Like this weird
that's
unlabeled
kind of
disc.
And because it's actually got a DVD cover, like somebody made, like printed out a cover, but then you open it up and it's just a burned DVD. And I was like, I don't know if like somebody gave this to me at a convention and was like, you need to check this out. Or sometimes people like send us stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have no idea where the fuck it came from. But yeah. So that was on the list. And then after that, I watched, and this will not be one I'm getting rid of, but I have to say, I'm a little mixed on it, Lady in White. And people love this. It was a little too saccharine for me. It felt so squeaky clean through the whole thing. I know.
It's
and then
a child
like,
murderer.
And then
what's
the child murderer shows up. It was just
I
the beginning.
Seen that, like since like being 10 or something. When
but
I was
do, you
on
like, yeah. Do you like Stephen King stuff?
And that's what
to
it
me,
felt,
it felt like a Stephen
it
King
felt
novel.
Like Stephen King, but even safer. Like it was a more vanilla Stephen King. And that was only until the child murderer showed up. And then I was like, okay, I'm with you. But yeah, up to that point, it was like Stephen King, but whereas
there's nothing
all,
safe about King because he has a car that'll kill you, a dog
exactly.
that'll kill you, a clown.
And I think that was my point was like in Stephen King, you always have this sweet little kind of bucolic, idyllic, rosewatery town. Mm-hmm. And there's always something that feels really wrong about it. In right. this one, it's like the perfect world, and then a child murderer shows up. So I was a bit mixed on it. And it's weird because I remembered seeing it when I was a kid and it being like, I love this movie.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it since I was 10. So it was kind of – it was interesting revisiting it. It did not hold up for me as well as I expected it to because I was leading it up with like Dave who watched it with me. I was like, oh, this is the greatest movie ever. Oh, my God, you're going to love this thing. And then like 15 minutes in, we're like – well, this is really sweet. And that's it. It was just kind of sweet.
I got to borrow it from one of you because you really liked it. And
yeah. I really loved it. I mean, again, I don't know the difference. There's three versions of it.
Oh.
Yeah, I watched the theatrical cut because I tend to kind of always go with the theatrical cut first because I assume there's a reason that it's the theatrical cut.
See, on this one, I went with the director's approved cut because he does an intro for it and everything. And I assume that's the movie that he wanted everyone to see.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I'm curious because at least in the director's cut, I guess the biggest narrative issue is, you know, the kid who's Lucas Haas in it, but it starts with him as an adult telling this story. So in that regard, you kind of already know that he's safe because he's telling the story as an, you know,
fuck Lucas Haas.
Yeah.
You know my Lucas Haas story?
No. Why?
First motherfucker to kiss my wife.
Are you serious?
Get out of here.
First human on this planet who kissed my wife.
Hey, now.
So
when
I'm
she was
tell.
6 years old, the two of them, I've seen Super 8 footage of them kissing.
Get out of here.
I'm not at a birthday party. I'm like, oh, you kid from Witness.
You know,
take your Amish haircut away from my wife.
He actually used to be, and this is really crude, but he actually used to be in a group of child actors in Hollywood that referred to themselves as the Pussy Patrol. All
right.
And it was him and Leonardo DiCaprio, and there was a group of them that swore that like they were the hottest shit in Hollywood.
Bunch
and,
of weenies.
Yeah, I don't even remember.
Luckily, there were six.
I so heard I a podcast on the history of this
oh my
group.
God. Yeah, Heartstruck because she has photos of DiCaprio when he was six, too, like seven.
Oh,
they're
see,
all
yeah, yeah.
They were kids in the Hollywood Hills kind of thing.
Wow.
But I've got the footage and I always liked Lucas Haas because of like Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
But as soon as I saw that, I was like, ooh.
He was always the quirky one.
Yeah. Listen, your wife was six at the time. She didn't know any better.
Yeah, yeah. We'll forgive
coming for
Selena
you, Haas.
This time.
Popular listener Haas.
But then the other two things I watched are definitely more kids oriented, but it was really nice to revisit them. Since my daughter is three, we were definitely looking for like kids movies in the Halloween bin because she loves Halloween. So not remembering it very well, I decided to pop in the 90s cartoon for Ray Bradbury's Halloween Tree. Which, have you guys seen this?
No, I don't know that one.
It's just a cartoon version of Ray Bradbury's Halloween story, but he narrates it. It's narrated by Bradbury, and Leonard Nimoy is one of the voices. Uh-huh. And the way that Halloween Tree is set up is it goes through all of these Halloween traditions. This kind of otherworldly being named Mr. Moundshroud takes this group of kids around and shows them where all of these Halloween traditions came from, like why we carve pumpkins and why witches ride brooms and things like that. So it gets into all of these different religions and cultures and how everything kind of comes together on Halloween, but it's really fascinating.
And it's animated?
Animated, huh. Yeah. Really fun. You should show it to your kid. It was really fun to revisit it. I hadn't seen it since I watched it for the first time, but it was really fun. And then one of our listeners, Tim Solomons, I hope I'm saying your last name correctly, sir, sent us Disney's Halloween Treat on DVD last week, which I had not seen since I was a kid. I just remember that it was narrated by this talking pumpkin that I thought was amazing. And it was like a clip show, like an anthology of all of these little spooky Disney cartoons. And so I watched that with Marnie, and I realized, I remembered midway through that they include the clip from Bald Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
From Fantasia, that Bald Mountain is part of it. And so, like, midway through, I'm like, oh, my God, is this going to freak her out? Because it used to freak me out when I was a kid. And Bald Mountain starts, and she's watching it, and I see her eyes get big, and then she looks at me, and she goes, Mommy, this is scary. This is scarier. And the last one that was on there was about like an ape who escaped from the zoo. And she was like, that guy's not a nice man like the ape was. And I was like, yeah, this is. And like the more I was watching it, I was like, it's got witches and ghosts and headless things. And yeah.
I wonder if Fantasia is scary because you put Mickey Mouse, something that's like innocent and familiar, and then you put that in danger and make it all scary and intense.
No, because this is, it's completely out of the framework
the context of it,
of Fantasia in this. It seriously, like, it was
He's not in that part.
No, it's literally just that skit.
It's just the night on Bald Mountain thing with, I think it's Cherbourg is the name of the actual, like, demon. And yeah, it's still scary as crap. I think that the music does a lot of it, but yeah.
In general, Fantasia scared me as a kid.
Way terrifying.
I mean.
And I will end by telling you guys what I was mentioning earlier about when I was out trick-or-treating. Like, we went out in Burbank, which is lovely, trick-or-treating, and everything was fine. And then we were standing in line at one of these home haunts, because people will set up a lot of little haunts in their front yard. And while we're standing in line to go through one, all of a sudden we start hearing the Purge siren blare. And then all of these people in Purge masks come pouring out of the house next door. And obviously they had all gotten together and planned to blast the Purge siren over like a siren in their front yard. But seriously, like, it was weirdly freaky.
Did,
like,
you sign any of the masks?
I didn't.
Like, I work at Blumhouse.com. Blumhouse.com.
No, it was just weird. Like, you hear that siren and you're immediately like, oh, that's the Purge. And then when you see just like a house open up and all these people start pouring out, it was strangely terrifying.
There's still power to movies that have masks. You know, like, that's one thing I noticed. A lot of teenagers were going as Purge. So, you know, I think it'd be cool to see some Hush masks out there.
Hey, you know, let's get that
kind
going.
Of a fun one going
let's
on.
Let's do it.
In honor of Flanagan.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention before we do Becca's game, you know, so much stuff has popped up on Netflix. It's been so overwhelming, especially because of the Halloween season. But I just managed to watch the third season of The Fall.
Which you watched it?
Yeah, okay, I watched it because it's only six episodes like the other seasons. And I watched it in the last 2-3 days. And this was a show I talked about a lot on Killer POV, our previous show. It was originally only 2 seasons, and it's, you know, Gillian Anderson's in it, and as a kind of an FBI, an English FBI profiler who's in Ireland helping on a serial killer case.
Yep.
And the serial killer is played by, what's his name, James Dorman, the guy that's in 50 Shades of Grey, ironically enough, because of this show.
Which kind of ruins it, because he seems so serial killer-y in that movie now.
Yeah, because of this show.
Yeah, it's like, I can't get rid of that image.
But it was on Netflix, and it's one of the more unique serial killer stories that I've ever seen, in the sense that they kind of switched the roles where you get to see every intimate moment of the killer with his wife and kids and family and how he goes about doing what he does, and give you this weird insight that's like really kind of unsettling. Whereas her character is kind of mysterious. They hint at her backstory, and she's also very, you know, business oriented and to the fact that she takes what she wants. And it ended in a way, the second season ended in a way where the show could have easily ended, and I would have been completely satisfied. Close, but the fact that they did a couple more episodes, I was really excited about it. The third season's really good. Initially, when it started, it took me a few minutes because it'd been so long since I seen it, and it picks up like right in the next moment. That I kind of, it took me a few minutes to figure out who each character was and what they were doing with it. They took a very interesting approach with it, which I guess we don't get to see a lot, is the aftermath of a killer's actions. How does it affect his family, the people closest to him? How did the police deal with it? Well, like, what does it affect them? Because obviously there's all this protocol, and on if you followed the rules the right way, and what they can get away with, what they could charge people with, et cetera. So it started out a little weird in terms of getting my bearings in terms of continuing the story and remembering who everyone was. But by the sixth episode, it ended so freaking strong. Like, it was so, so good that I kind of want to rewatch it now, knowing how they ended the third season. Because there's definitely a lot of dense stuff going on there. But if you'd never seen the show, definitely go back to Netflix and watch the first two seasons. And this was Netflix produced. So where it was a BBC show originally, this was an original Netflix production to do another season of it. And, you know, Gillian Anderson, you know, you may love her in The X-Files, but she's one of the best roles she'll ever do is in this show.
And this coincided with her role in Hannibal, and I remember them both.
Oh, yeah.
There's some crossover with those kind of characters. It was very good.
Yeah.
I like the first two a lot. I'll check it out. Yeah, that's kind of happened to The Killing. It was on AMC a couple seasons, and then the last one was on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's nice that they are willing to tie up stories and give you that little extra that, you know.
Yeah.
They've got the money.
Yeah. They do have
I'll
the
check
money.
It out. I'll definitely watch it.
All righty. So what do you got for us, Meg?
Okay,
what are we
guys.
Doing here?
Let's try some trivia here. Now, the first one that I'm going to do, first one I'm going to do is these are horror restaurants. These are restaurants in horror movies or horror TV shows. And I'll say loosely horror because if not, somebody's going to argue with
me. All right, everybody at home, play along, please.
So okay, guys.
Yeah, this isn't about me and Rob stumbling
we're
and
we're
failing.
We're going to be terrible.
Yeah, I'm not even going to keep score on this one, guys. Okay, so all you have to do is I'm going to tell you the name of the restaurant and you just tell me what movie it's in.
All right.
Okay. Number one.
Blood Diner.
God damn it, Elric. That was my first one.
Was it really?
Fuad Ramsey's Catering. Yes. No, no, no. Wait. Not Blood Diner. I'm sorry.
Oops,
it's not Blood Diner.
Say it again.
Blood Feast.
Yes.
Wait, what was the name of the thing?
Fuad Ramsey's Catering.
All right. Well, whatever. I
so now I'm pre-cognitive. This is like,
you
I'm done with trivia. Mic drop.
You did the Blood Feast remake.
You know, I don't think they actually say the name of the restaurant in Blood Diner.
But they must have an exterior shot where you
they
see
to.
It.
They have to.
Unless it just says diner.
Somebody tweet
okay,
me
that's
that.
A good, we want to know.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of the restaurant
that's hilarious,
in Blood Diner.
All right, let's actually play. Okay?
Okay, guys.
What do you mean? I won.
Let her get one out before.
Dorcia.
Wait, is that me?
Yeah.
What's my turn?
Oh, or both.
American Psycho.
Yeah.
I got that one.
Okay, this one, I'll say it's a cartoon. Harryhausen's. It's a fine dining restaurant that they go to. It's a kid's cartoon.
Recent?
That show you like.
A couple years ago. No, it's a movie.
Oh, a movie.
Mm-hmm. And they go to Harryhausen's. Rob probably owns it in 3D.
That's what I'm thinking.
Two main characters.
What's the Monster House?
Monster House?
No. Characters are, I can't even, Mike. And Mike is the main character. Anyway, it's Monsters, Inc. They go to a cute little restaurant called Harryhausen's in it.
I don't own that, but it's okay.
Let's try Krova Milk Bar.
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, Clockwork Orange.
The Double R Diner.
Twin Peaks.
Very good.
Wow.
Woolies Diner. I wouldn't have known this one if I hadn't looked it up.
Give us a clue rather than the answer.
It's a remake. 2004 remake.
Ooh.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
No. Dawn of the Dead, the 2004 remake.
Oh, damn it.
Winkies.
Mulholland Drive.
Yes. This one's a TV show. The Bronze. I've watched every single one of them. I think you have too. Both of you.
American Horror Story?
No.
Bates Motel?
No. Go back further. 90s.
Oh.
They go to the Bronze. It's a bar.
Friday the 13th?
Mm-mm. Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
No, I definitely haven't
seen it. I know they go to the place, but I just don't remember.
Oh, you haven't seen them all?
Yeah.
Okay. Acuna Boys.
That does ring a bell. Acuna Boys.
That's not Blood Diner?
It is not.
Yes, you're right. That
no, this one is it's the restaurant and Grindhouse.
Oh. Okay.
Damn it.
And then this one plays into the guest you will be hearing from on Monday.
Ooh.
American Chicken Bunker.
Poultry Guest.
Poultry Guys.
Damn you.
Okay, guys. And just to finish it out, I am giving you 10 quick horror quotes. These are going to be lightning fire, okay, and you better respond
just
back
for the record,
super quick.
I got the Jaws one wrong in trivia, so I'm fucked.
Bad Hat Harry.
Bad Hat Harry. Elric got it wrong. What the hell?
But I did get people under the stairs once to win trivia. It was like my glorious moment. Yeah, everyone go. That was my favorite moment in history.
All right, we're doing movie title,
guys,
right?
10. These are pretty easy. You just have to give me the title. My name is Horace. My name is Horace.
Monster Squad.
I'm going to do something now they used to do in Vietnam. It's called making a head on a stick.
House?
We had him on the show a couple of episodes back.
Bill Moseley?
Head on a stick, guys.
Bill Moseley?
No.
Cohen.
It's Larry Australian.
Cohen. Australian. Oh, Wolf Creek. Oh,
Wolf Creek. Yeah. That's a rather tender subject. Anyone for another slice? Or another slice, anyone, I think is how it's actually stated. They just remade this on Fox.
Tender subject.
Anyone for another slice? They're eating meatloaf. Oh, dear God. You people have never seen Rocky Horror Picture Show. I'm not even going to kid myself.
Yeah, you should have known that.
You're forgetting one thing about Billy Loomis. I fucking killed him.
Scream 2.
Yes! Very good. Same. At trivia, they got that wrong. That ain't cold weather approaching. That's death... Or, sorry, that ain't cold weather. That's death approaching.
The fall?
Set in the cold. Something's approaching.
The thing? No, nothing's approaching.
It didn't seem like the thing was right. No.
That ain't...
Dead and buried?
Nope. No. It's vampires.
Vampires. Damn it.
That ain't cold weather approaching. That cold ain't the weather. That's death approaching. Let me read it correctly. That cold...
No wonder we got it wrong.
Yeah.
Cold
that
vampire
cold
movie.
Ain't the weather. That's death approaching.
Lost Boys?
Might be set somewhere where it's night... For 30 days.
Oh, 30 days a night.
No, that is cold. You're right.
Yeah.
You keep making movies I've seen
Antarctica.
Like once.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that one.
That's my mother you're pissing on.
Dead
brain
alive.
Dead. No, that's wrong.
No,
I get it because I said brain dead.
Dead alive.
Wait, look it up and find out what the first title it ever played anywhere in the world.
Oh, my God.
Everyone knows
we
it's
just
dead alive.
Cut up our girlfriend with a chainsaw.
Evil Dead 2.
Yes.
But not as good as the Big Lebowski quote. You know, my girlfriend cut off her toe. It's not fair. We're nihilists.
The dead are not quiet in Hill House. Oh, my God.
Song Haunted Hill.
Yeah, The Haunting.
Oh,
The
Haunting? Oh, Hill House. Yeah, yeah.
Hill House.
And Beep Beep Richie.
It.
And my favorite. That was very student film-like.
Ooh. Well, that sounds like a Scream one, too.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. I want to say like Urban Legend, Final Cut, the second one.
Yeah, yeah. It does sound like the filmmaking one.
Too meta. They're watching a film that's inside the film, and then they go, that was very student film-like. It might kill you. Watching this film.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ring.
Ring!
The Ring?
Yeah. Very
Which one?
Good,
American
guys.
Or the
other? It's the American one. Yeah.
So I beat you on Diners, you killed me on quotes.
I did.
Okay, guys, we'll see how you do next week.
Yeah, let us know how
let
you
us know
did on
you got them all.
Yeah.
Stuff.
All right.
Take care, guys.
See you soon.